considered putting in, say, four different bills, but recognizing the cost of processing bills and the number of hearings, they felt that it would wrap things up into one. So there were about four different features. One was removed in the Business and Consumer Affairs Committee. Yeah. There remained three, one of them being the proposal that we had to provide for specifying fees by administrative. Okay.
Which we're taking care of.
Yeah. Our budget included the changes that we are discussing, and publicly stated that the income was based on these things that would have to be were also based upon passage of a bill, this particular one, Senate Bill 43. We thought that that was the proper procedure to follow.
Right. In your administrative rule that you're going to promulgate, and I want to make sure I understand that hasn't been promulgated yet, has it? You're going to do that to make it conform to this bill, right? Is that how I understand it?
No, Chairman Simpson, the board presently does have administrative rules.
They do have.
They do have. They cover a broad range of
matters. But you're going to change them?
No, it's not going to change them at all. All it is doing is correcting what that should have been done by saying that for violation of these administrative rules, the licensee may be subject to disciplinary action.
Okay. Now what about civil penalty?
There are provisions for civil penalty.
And does it state the amount?
No. ORS 672 authorizes civil penalty and states that it shall be up to $1,000 per offense. The administrative rules go on to clarify and interpret what the law is to say and give some guidelines on amounts.
Are you saying that there's an overriding civil penalty administrative rule that allows any agency to impose these?
Huh? Not any agency. It's in the... This particular one refers specifically to the Board of Engineering Examiners. It isn't a broad blanket approval.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
Paul, you probably have an administrative rule in effect that defines some restriction on engineering shops, the use of draftsmen, that kind of thing. Is that what we're talking about here? You have to have a professional engineer supervising us, or a span over the people that are doing some of the mechanical drawing, I suspect. You've got some standards involved.
Yes, there are standards that define, supervision required of professionals.
Okay, now, currently, you don't have the ability to sanction those violations, you believe.
That is correct.
That's what this speaks to.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think I'm right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, this is a little bit, this particular subject, but it's always bothered me. How do you, if an engineer makes a mistake, and I can think of two, one of them happened here in Salem when the new building came in with a lot of snow on, and there was a dam washed out up in eastern Oregon due to a mistake that the engineer made by putting some sand in the middle of it because he wasn't there to stop the contractor from putting that in there. Now, what do you do to an engineer that allows that to happen?
Well, Representative Jones, at the beginning, a complaint is received. It's analyzed to determine whether it's valid, whether the subject is such that we have any authority for. Following that, we've obtained the comments or response of the engineer or land surveyor who is the subject for the complaint. Then those are considered. Our board is comprised of good representation of professionals and has access to others to that allow it to evaluate whether the performance of that individual was up to the standards that that should be expected of a minimally qualified person. If there is that question or any demonstration of incompetence or gross negligence, then there could be notification of the board's intent to suspend, reprimand, revoke, and generally a person receiving one of those will request the hearing that is provided and allowed if he answers within 20 days. Now, we will be going on to a hearing, and there have been several. We have some coming up. There have been revocations that have resulted. There have been requirements that persons go back and repass written examinations. It's difficult to make any blanket statement because but each case is really peculiar in its own nature. But
really no recourse, though, for the person that gets hooked with that kind of a job. And,
well, there is a recourse if incompetence or gross negligence is demonstrated, or unethical conduct that's included in the rules of professional conduct, and some of these other items that were kind of bypassed that caused this proposed.
Well, just one final comment, and that is that this Ed Mashton, the one that built the dam, he paid that engineer $10,000 and still had to rebuild the dam, the upper part of it that washed out, due to the engineer, and he never got nothing back.
Go ahead, Dan. Paul, there is a provision in your statutes that say, in addition to any other penalty provided by law, any person who violates any provision of ORS, any provision of your chapter, or any rule adopted thereunder, shall forfeit and pay to the general fund a civil penalty in an amount determined by the board of not more than $1,000. The penalty shall be assessed and proceeding applicable to contested cases under the Administrative Procedures Act. Okay. Now, just to make sure I see the distinction, what you're asking for in this bill is the authority to levy a sanction short of this civil penalty.
That is true.
Okay.
There could be a reprimand or short suspension. I was just taking a look at some material here to indicate to you the boards, I believe, I think you have some that I passed on to you, Mr. Simmons. You can start out with architects, accountants, audiologists, pathologists, and go on down the line of boards and agencies where this is a standard. And I've never known of any real particular problem. In fact, I think that was the purpose for administrative rules, that there be some recourse if they're not followed.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see any particular problem. You've given them very broad rulemaking authority.
Yes.
They prescribe standards of professional conduct. They can prescribe anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
All they're saying is that just we're not real sure whether we have the authority necessary to enforce the short of a civil penalty.
I see.
So if anything, it probably allows them a more reasonable approach to a problem.
Yeah. You think the passage of this, or amending this and doing what we're about to do here, would restrict the people trying to get into the profession more than it has?
If you pass this out and approve it, it's liberalizing. We're removing restrictions that we don't feel really have any benefit for the public. It's a
namely, the $1,000 fine, you have nothing under that that you can do, is that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, if you're, Mr. Chairman, if you're referring to penalties, this bill just makes a minor adjustment. It isn't significant in itself. When I was responding to you, I was thinking of the bill as a whole, and yeah, that it really opens up access to the professions.
Like your intent question.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Any problem?
I'll move the amendments.
Senator Hurd moves the amendments. And is there any objection? Hearing none, the amendments are adopted.
The bill to the full committee.
Senator Hurd moves the bill to the full committee with an impasse recommendation. Is there any objection to that? If not, that's so ordered. If Senator Roberts comes back, I guess.
I don't think he'll be back.
All right, let's decide for Senator Hurd.
That's one I'd like to hear.
Guess a number between 1 and 10.
No, I'll take it. That's all right. Danny's got that other committee to worry about. Okay. All right. Is that it, Dan?
That's all I've got.
Thank you very much for.
Mr. Chairman, what have we got left in this committee?
Darn little. I think we've exhausted all of our resources.
Oh, sorry.
Well, that's a good question. We've got, I think, just two budgets, fire marshal and first aid.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're adjourned.
I thought we did one of those.
I think we have more people to testify on 2569 than we do 2450, so let's call on that one first and go ahead and come on up and you sign up. I don't have your name.
Can
you come up and give your name and address and who you represent for the record, please? You don't have to sign that. Just give it for the record.
My name is Danny Santos, and with the Hispanic Local Action Committee. My address is 4864 Tohee Court South here in Salem. And I'll be testifying on 2450.
All right, go ahead. Are you going to join, Representative?
Yes, if I may.
All right.
Are we on the other bill instead of
69? Yes, that's right. I'll take it first.
What's the number?
2450. All right. Maybe somebody can explain to me how, you know, how we got this bill even. It came through judiciary to the House floor and passed and went back to the Senate, and the Senate president evidently sent it to Ways and Means. Now, that doesn't make, it doesn't have to make a lot of sense. Go ahead, and Representative, you want to start out?
Yes, I may. For the record, Representative Dick Springer, House District 12. Members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety, thanks for the opportunity to appear briefly. I will, if you will, introduce the topic. I think the real experts are the two individuals sitting to my left. I will be returning, if I may, to Judiciary Committee, where we have a work session up there. Representative Simpson, I think the question you asked, unfortunately, about why the subject is before you is one that I'm afraid I can't answer either. I have not had any conversation with the Senate President's office as to why it was this bill came down here. The only thing that occurs to me is that during the floor debate, you may recall that Representative Mason had several questions as to what might happen if we were to specifically prohibit this kind of activity, which I think we would suggest is in fact already prohibited as a result of certain court action in federal court. And it was his concern possibly that an officer or an agency that acted contrary to this policy or this law might be liable to prosecution for official misconduct. I think that was his concern in Florida Bay. He and I have not had a chance to really discuss that issue further.
Yes, I remember.
My recollection, perhaps your committee or perhaps the individuals to my left know more about how many times a person or an agency has been prosecuted for official misconduct. I've just been informed when I was researching this on another subject that there are 4 appellate cases in the entire Oregon volumes of Oregon reports that deal with prosecutions for official misconduct. In my 2.5 years in the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, I can't recall ever being associated with such prosecution. I don't think that they are particularly favored, nor are personally have we had occasion to have those kinds of prosecutions. Perhaps the most notable, and I hope I'm not misstating the law that was applied, was for the former DA here in Marion County, Mr. Gortmaker. I'm not even sure if that was a specific charge that was alleged to have been violated. But I think Representative Mason's concern is one that I just don't think past experience shows that truly would be a concern. And if that was the reason for a referral because of that potential fiscal impact, then I don't think that's really so serious that it should deter your favorable consideration of the bill and the policy that's stated therein. I think that some information has been provided to you. The reason that I asked our House Judiciary Committee to introduce the bill was because of the concern that folks to my left brought to me. They, if you will, felt it was appropriate to remind, if you will, or to perhaps strengthen by force of statute, by force of law, what has become official or what the courts have said are the legitimate activities for local law enforcement officials versus the responsibilities of an immigration and naturalization service, the relationship, proper relationship between a state agency and a federal agency discharging, on one hand, criminal law enforcement and on the other, civil law enforcement activities. And I hope our floor debate pointed out that in response to questions that if there were ever a problem in the enforcement of the civil laws in which another law, criminal law, had been violated, then we had absolutely no problem with local law enforcement officials enforcing a criminal law violation or making an arrest if it were to arise from enforcement of civil action. That just makes sense, and it's not our intent to prohibit that kind of legitimate activity. It's only in those circumstances where local law enforcement agencies or officials, we think in the past have improperly assisted in the enforcement of a federal civil sanction. And we feel the court action has suggested that they do not have that authority to do so. And there's also a tremendous concern, maybe even a larger concern that's truly of a fiscal nature. If, in fact, a local agency were to engage in this kind of unauthorized activity, there potentially could be tremendous liability in a civil rights lawsuit brought in federal court under Section 1983 of the Federal code that deals with enforcement of civil rights discrimination, if in fact a local law enforcement agency were to improperly attempt to enforce a law, civil law, over which it truly has no jurisdiction. That's perhaps the greatest fiscal concern that I can spot, but it's one that this bill, we think, would alleviate, not increase that exposure, I hope. And that's the reason, I guess, we brought it to you, and again, I think the experts are seated here on my left, and I'd invite your attention, and if you have any questions, I'd try to respond, but if I may be excused, if I concluded and returned to the judiciary, I'd appreciate that also.
All right, Representative Springer, yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll manage it. We need you. We'll send for you. All right.
Please don't hesitate.
All right.
Please don't hesitate. Thank you very much.
No, whichever one of you want to start, go ahead.
I'll let Gail introduce herself to you.
My name is Gail Castillo. I'm the former president of the Hispanic Political Action Committee. When this bill was first introduced, I was the serving president. Since that time, Daniel Santos is the current president. So I'm going to make the presentation.
Well, as Representative Springer indicated, I think there's several things that are of concern to the Hispanic community. First of all, one is the primary purpose of the bill, and that is to basically there's some concern about some detention and interrogation of Hispanics
by local law enforcement officials in regards to enforcement of federal immigration law. And it just, this bill would simply protect citizens from the from those kind of unwarranted detentions. And I think, as the cover letter indicates, there's also a very encouraging note for us when the Judiciary Council or the Judiciary Committee reviewed the bill. They asked for, their legal counsel asked for legal advice from the Immigration and Naturalization Services legal counsel out of Washington, D.C. They found no problem with the bill and did not see that there'd be any conflict in enforcing, they're continuing to enforce the law. So really, this does not impede the enforcement of immigration laws. It simply says that it is a federal issue and that the federal law enforcement agencies could continue to enforce those laws, so that does not hamper those kind of operations. And in the attachment that we have provided you, I think Rocky Badia, an attorney of law, has outlined a couple of things for you: the law, the problems, and the ramifications of illegal enforcement. And I think he cites for you some current laws and attorney general's opinion from an Oregon attorney general, basically citing that it is, in their eyes, that they have no authority to enforce federal immigration law. Now, the problem is really not widespread, but it is spread enough that I think it does bring up the concerns that we've indicated. Simply, you find local agencies in, like I said, in isolated areas trying to I guess, play federal law enforcement official and start asking immigration law of Hispanic community members. And I think that that really should cause some concern, not only for the Hispanic community, but also for those local law enforcement officials. Because in the long run, as one of the court court cases indicated, you may find yourself in fiscal liability if a civil rights suit is taken. But basically, those are the fundamental issues that we are trying to outline. And like I said, the bill itself, and it's, as you have before you, is quite simple.
Mr. Chairman. Yes, go ahead, Representative Jones.
Next to the last paragraph there, in your statement, it says, since the bill protects Oregon citizens, and I don't believe that's quite right, because I don't think that we're referring to Oregon citizens. And of course, the bill says foreign citizenship, and I don't know whether that's a misprint on your part or what. But
no, it really, I think this is, obviously this is an Oregon, we're trying to pass an Oregon statute here, or legislative.
I know, but you're not an Oregon. We're not talking about Oregon citizens. If we were, then we wouldn't need the bill.
That's the whole point.
Can I clarify? Sure. May I clarify? The point behind the bill, and the reason that this came up, is that there are many Hispanic U.S. citizens in the state of Oregon who are involved in farm-related labor. Okay, and during those peak seasons, during the summer and other times, many of these individuals with their families, male, female, and teenagers, etc., have been traveling on the way to work. And because of the roadblocks, because of the stoppages that have occurred, and because of their mode of dress, which is obviously appropriate for the kind of work that they're about to engage in, they have been stopped on the streets, in shopping centers, outside churches, and in their cars and their vehicles on the way to work. These people indeed are Oregon citizens, and we're concerned about their particular civil rights. And that's
one of the reasons. They don't, isn't going to help them. If the law, the interpretation of the law is such that everybody of Hispanic blood is not going to be, is going to be protected by then, I thought it was for people that were not citizens of the United States, or of the state of Oregon. I guess
that is a good point. I think there is some confusion about the intent of the bill. It is not to protect or to deny the Immigration and Naturalization Service from enforcing the laws. That is not, that has never been an issue here. They will continue to do so, and they rightfully do so. There are some, issues.
No, but suppose you were born here. This would give you some protection that I don't even get.
Well, I think it would. I think it would protect you. I think the law simply states it would protect any Oregon citizen from that.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
All right. All right. You go ahead.
We would just like to respond to your questions. I think the basic concept here, though, is that local law enforcement officers, according to the charge that they've been given, are not to be involved in immigration issues. And we've seen historically that this has happened, and the basis upon which people are being stopped is based on their language, their color, and of their mode of dress.
I guess, are we talking about state police also?
Sheriffs, state police, a lot, okay. Just about every...
In other words, and I, you know, I never heard this said before, but you're talking about roadblocks. If someone of Hispanic origin is exceeding the speed limit...
That's correct.
Then,
they should be stopped.
Any person could stop them, regardless of state police or sheriff or
that's
whatever.
That's correct.
And at that time, then they may not inquire into their...
The biggest... The clarification is that they must stop them with a... If there's a... I don't know what the legal term is. Suspicion that they're committing a crime. For instance, as you say, they're driving too fast. All of the traffic violations, not having stop lights, brake lights, etc. If they're seeing a scene of a crime, then the officer has a reason to arrest them, take them to the city hall, wherever they take them, and detain them for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during those 24 hours, if it's the officers can then call immigration, which they do, and if immigration comes and realizes that they are indeed not citizens and they can take them. But the idea is that people are being stopped with no cause, with no suspicion of having committed any crime. They're being just stopped just randomly, again, based on dress, etc. So this would not impede the enforcement of immigration at that level.
I suppose that probably the reason it should have been sent to Senate Judiciary.
We agree.
Because we're going to have some difficulties here. I'm already having difficulties trying to discern between the legal terms.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there's any fiscal impact at all. We haven't got into that yet, but we will. But I see... In looking at this paper that was handed out, looking for illegal aliens, I suppose it is a fine line, and I presume that some of the concerns that Representative Mason had and that Representative Springer spoke to probably are real, I don't know, but I suppose they are real.
Well, we're very anxious that it have a hearing also on the Senate side, in the Judiciary Committee, so those kinds of issues can be brought to light and discussed and acted accordingly.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
Does the bill have any other referral? Is it just a straight Senate Ways and Means referral?
Yes,
is that it?
That's correct. And I think you were here, I suppose, Jack, I don't know if Jack would ever, excuse me, Senator Ripper, where you were here, I asked a question of, you know, about being sent here. And I have no objection to that, and I suppose we can
ask those questions because we got a whole host of bills in
there. Essentially what he said.
Yes. But I'm, you know, since this did pass the House and came out of Judiciary, it would seem to me that,
you know, you could put an amendment. Nobody stopped for roadblocks to be arrested. We had, just before the legislature started, we had state police stopping everybody Saturday night. And
yes, that's right.
See if they
I recall that.
And just putting a roadblock up and stopping every car.
Yeah. There is a federal law. Or is it simply the Immigration Naturalization Act that I'm trying to read here? It is clear that state and local law enforcement officers have no authority to enforce immigration laws, but They would not be enforcing them, in fact. They would merely be, they wouldn't be allowed to put them on an airplane or a bus and send them back to Mexico, no?
It's the same idea as
detaining them as a second.
Income tax. For instance, there's a federal law that says we all must pay income tax. And the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, is responsible for that particular enforcement of that law. No local police officers, sheriff, et cetera, would ever stop anyone questioning them regarding their payment of the taxes or detain them for payment of the taxes. That would purely be an IRS function. And this is, again, the same idea. It is not the function of the local law enforcement officer to be involved in those activities.
You're not talking about an incidental stop, though. If it comes up that
if a stop
for something else, if you
they're stopped for something else,
lose.
Right. If there's just cause, if there's cause to think that this person is committing a crime or a violation of a law, such as a traffic violation, speeding, or not having appropriate lights on their car, or whatever the crime or law is, then that person, just like any other person, can be stopped.
Why wouldn't it say does it say incidental?
Discussing the problem, I think Representative Hooley outlined it very well, because, you know, like I want to reemphasize, Oregon is a haven for illegal fireworks. This is another mailer that was sent to Oregon residents called Rockets, the biggest rocket sale ever. And this is from the people in Vancouver, Washington, who have their fireworks store right off Interstate 5, just outside of Vancouver. They are the same ones who are advertising over television now and over the radio, encouraging Oregon residents to come across the border and buy these types of fireworks. We are concerned about that occurring. I must say to you also that this organization right here is very concerned about House Bill 2569. One of the members of our association on May 12th, I just happen to remember that date, stopped in at this fireworks store and got into a discussion about what was happening in Oregon. And they are very concerned about House Bill 2569 passing, because if it passes, they feel it will have a definite impact on their business. And I must say to you, that is exactly what we want to have happen. We want to discourage people from driving to Vancouver and buying the rockets, firecrackers, etc.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
John, could I ask you who the Oregon Independence Association is?
Sure. It is a group of wholesalers and I guess you could call them retailers, the ones who have the existing little retail stands now that sell the sparklers and the little smoke-producing items. The president of the organization, I would say, is a resident of Canby, Oregon.
Okay. Would they oppose a bill to fully legalize fireworks in Oregon? To bring it so that it's Washington style?
To be perfectly honest with you, I don't think they have addressed that question, and I have not talked to them.
It isn't very likely, though.
I really can't say. Yeah. There are, you know, some of these people I represent also sell fireworks in Washington, and they admit there are some problems with the Washington law. But I would also add that in response to what is going on in Washington, the Washington legislature had, I think, at least 9 bills before it this legislative session to change their fireworks law, and not one of those bills was approved. So it appears that Washington is going to maintain what they have for at least some time now. And that's the reality that we have to live with. In discussing how to get at this problem of illegal fireworks coming into Oregon, I think the legislature has several options. First of all, we could enact a total ban statewide on all fireworks, including sparklers and snakes. You know, that
I think when you talk about a traditional item like fireworks and a ban, a prohibition, many people realize that that just will not work. As a matter of fact, this entire issue of a nationwide ban on fireworks was discussed in 1976 at the request of the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And a Judge Pfeiffer, who researched this entire question and took volumes of testimony, came to the same conclusion, that to totally ban fireworks is just not the answer, that reasonable regulation is a better approach. I suppose we could, as Senator Hurd asked, go completely to a Washington system and open it up to all Class C fireworks. I understand that. And again, that creates some problems, because then we are starting to deal with the more dangerous types of fireworks. Another option that we have, of course, is to do nothing. And I don't know, you know, that may be what the legislature chooses to do, but in doing so, we continue to encourage people to buy the illegal fireworks that are the dangerous kinds of fireworks without any option for them. And I think, finally, the fourth and what we consider...
It's close to that, though, wouldn't it, John? Excuse
to a certain degree, Representative Simpson, that's exactly true, But I think that just based on at least one response that we have from this dealer in Washington, who is very afraid of his business being hurt if this bill passes, I think that's an indication of at least partial of success we can have in addressing this problem by allowing the non-explosive, non-aerial types of fireworks. I think it's important to understand exactly what we are talking about. And one of the pieces I've handed to you, I just have a picture of the items. It's a memo that's addressed to members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. It's the second page.
Yeah.
I have X'd out all of the items that are not included
okay.
in House Bill 2569.
Let's just talk about the ones that are.
Okay, the ones that are included. Sparklers are already allowed in Oregon, and of course the little smoke producing devices, the snakes.
Yeah.
What we would propose adding would be the torches and primarily the fountains. Those would be the items, and a wheel, and also a ground spinner that spins on the ground.
California candle.
That is a handheld device.
Yeah.
It is similar to a handheld fountain or a torch.
Yeah, yeah.
And it produces an effect.
Home fountain and page. Okay.
The next page is, I think, the one that is particularly interesting, because these are statistics that have been gathered by the Consumer Product Safety Commission in their analysis of fireworks injuries nationwide. And as you can see, sparklers, I imagine, because of the huge numbers of them that are sold, have a fairly high injury rate. Of course, nothing compared to the firecrackers.
Yeah, but what kind of an injury, for heaven's sakes? A burn on the index finger or something?
Yes, these are burns that have required some hospital treatment.
Oh,
so it could be a burn.
Walking across the hot wires with bare feet. Walking on the wires, running them into your foot.
Those types of things.
Yeah, okay.
The other items that I have put an X by here would be the ones that we would propose be added and allowed for sale in Oregon. And I think you can see, again, that we are talking about the very safest of all of these types of items.
They spelled out carefully in the bill.
Oh, yes, they are delineated in the bill. And the last page shows the number of states and the different fireworks laws that they do have.
What is Class C? Is that a boom?
Class C includes all of the fireworks we're talking about, plus firecrackers, small firecrackers, and, really, all of the items that were pictured here are Class C fireworks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I think it's interesting to note, first of all, the number of states that allow these types of items to be sold. They're in the categories Roman numeral 1, Roman numeral 2, and Roman numeral 3. Utah, just in their legislative session, enacted a law that similar to what we're proposing here. It's also interesting to note that over the past 12 years, since 1971, there have been about 10 states who have changed their fireworks laws. None of them have gone back, as it were. All of them have enhanced the kinds of fireworks that could be sold in that state. I take it back. Texas is one that I think banned rockets, big rockets that were formerly sold in Texas.
But Mr. Chairman,
yeah, go ahead.
I think what you're not mentioning is that Oregon, when I grew up, had rockets, full firecrackers, everything. We've already changed our law. So you're asking us to go back the other direction, aren't you?
That's correct. That's correct.
Let me ask you this. In terms of sparklers and the smoke bombs and so on, who manufactures those? Are they the same people that manufacture the whatever you would be adding in this bill?
The people who manufacture those items, as I understand it, about 50% of the fireworks that come into the United States are from the Republic of China.
Okay, it's the same manufacturers that would manufacture this next group that you're asking us to approve, that manufacture what we use.
I'm sure that there are similarities.
It's the same outfit that manufactures all of those that are used in Washington State, right?
I can't answer that question.
Sure.
There's
the
group in Illinois.
The thing is, whether your group that you represent, and I think probably there are some ties between the group that you represent and what's going on in Washington State right now, I don't think anybody can make any pledge or agree that the next session will be to go all the way to where Washington is. I would expect that would be the case. So that because we're talking about the same manufacturers, you're talking about the people that be selling them. It seemed to me that you're just taking one step at a time, but that in fact we're headed back to where we came from at one point.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, my response to that is that we were asked to work on this law and this law alone. We have not had any indication at all that the people we represent are going to ask for any more next session.
Well, I think I would think next, like Representative Cooley's son, it's still not going to get what her son is talking about if he still sees his friends from Washington State or people going over to Washington buying illegal fireworks. It would seem to me that that's the next logical step, is to go the next, one step more.
I guess my response to that would be that the next legislature, in its wisdom, is going to have to take a look at that, if that were even proposed. And I think that's that may happen for all I know. I have no idea. But again, that's a separate policy issue that the legislature is going to have to address. And I think on this particular issue, to me at least, is separate from that, because we're talking about here and now and how we might be able to at least reduce some of these illegal fireworks that are coming into Oregon that are really causing the problem.
Legalizing what's illegal, then we can reduce it.
I don't know if I use those words.
I don't care what they do, as long as they don't come back with the boom.
Yeah.
The noise is drove them crazy.
I think it's interesting to look at why the House Judiciary Committee unanimously approved this bill, because they had four hearings and work sessions on this entire issue and determined a number of things, including the safety factor that was involved, including the fact that that there are some other parts of the bill that are very important. For example, the idea of adding the word possess to the statutes to make it illegal to possess illegal fireworks in Oregon. I don't know how many of you are aware of the case about Uncle Sam's fireworks in Clackamas County, but had we had the law that said possess, these people would not have been able to operate. In addition,
why don't we just keep the law as it is then and just leave that, amend the bill and leave that in?
Because we can, Mr. Chair and Senator, we continue to encourage this type of activity.
Who does?
Well, I think the policymakers to a large degree.
The policymakers? What do you mean?
Well, I guess I mean the legislature who says that everything is fine in this state as far as fireworks go now.
We do? How do we do that?
Well, there's been no active move anyway until now to change the laws to make it at least, I'm going, basically what I understand is going on in Washington is they ship these items into Oregon. There is an indication, at least to them, that Oregon is going to continue to be a prime ground for them to ship their items into this state.
Mr. Chairman, in the city of Klamath Falls, I mean, we have ordinances on this, and it doesn't take too much to get the city police to come up and when they hear fireworks explode or going off to get them up to take them. I don't know, we might do a lot of that by city ordinance, but I just find it difficult to talk about making a change to clean up the legal question by simply loosening up the law. And I would support, as I told John when he came to the office, I'd support eliminating what we have at the present time, relying on what civic groups do or through cities, or just leaving the law as it is and making it illegal to possess. I would support that much.
Mr. Chair, I'll just mention the other parts of the bill.
Yes.
It does allow rural fire protection districts to enforce existing fireworks laws. And this is a request that was put in by the Fire District 10 in Multnomah County and would have effect on many of the more rural districts in the state. And finally, I guess the reason that the bill is before Ways and Means deals with the fee structure that was proposed by the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee recommended that there be a retail license fee of $10 for the people who would sell these items and a wholesale license fee of $20 and a license fee of $20 for a public display operator. That is the local Kiwanis, JCs, or whomever may put on a fireworks show. We would ask the committee to consider at least an amendment to the Ahn-Gross bill that would change the wholesale license fee, or excuse me, the public display permit fee from the $20 in the bill to $10, because many of the shows that do, you know, put on the fireworks displays for the community are small communities, small shows, and the $10 fee would seem to be more reasonable for them. To make up that lost revenue going into the fire marshal's office to develop these permits, we would recommend that the wholesale license fee be increased from the $20 in the Ahn-Gross bill to $500.
How many of these wholesalers would there be that would be affected?
We estimate there are three right now in Oregon, and we would estimate that, and who knows, there might be 5, 10, 20. Washington went from 3 to 20, and they have a $1,000 permit fee.
How over a period of what length of time, from 3 to 20 in Washington?
1 year.
1 year.
Yes, sir.
But that had something, did they also at that time change the number and the amount and the kind that could be sold?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is when they went to the more explosive devices. Yeah.
Where were you last 4th of July?
Baker, of Sunny Valley.
Do you not have any?
We
had $5,000 from the firecrackers. I haven't heard in years. Skyrockets. Well, unfortunately, they just went up, literally brought back.
It's interesting to note that in Washington, they are selling items to Oregonians that are illegal for sale in Washington. And it's, as I understand it, you sign the little form that says you aren't going to use this item in
Washington.
In Washington. And I don't know, that's just what I have heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that completes the bill, does it?
Yes. Yeah. We think that, you know, we've tried to work with everybody to come up with a reasonable approach to this problem, because we do think a problem exists, and based on the way other states have chosen to solve this problem, we think that we've taken a reasonable approach. and would encourage a positive action on the book.
You stay right there. Somebody here from the fire marshal's office. Yes, come up, please. And you stay there, John. I may have to ask you another question.
First time we set a table, we could.
I think
you know, second time.
Okay. I think you, didn't you tell us about this bill before when we were, was it you or who was it?
I was asked about the bill.
Go ahead and give your name.
I'm Pat Franzen, Chief Deputy State Fire Marshal, representing the State Fire Marshal's office. This bill actually is a result of two bills. We introduced a bill also that closely followed Senator Hurd's comments in that we introduced the word possess, because we do have an enforcement problem, a significant enforcement problem of trying to regulate fireworks. And the way the law is written and Attorney General opinion is such that a person can have anything they want. They just can't sell it, offer it for sale, explode, have it explode, or intend to explode it. Or you can store it and keep it. That's dealing with a personal intent. So it's not enforceable law the way it was. And we introduced the law to change possess and twofold raise fees, both for public display and dealers, to be willing to things that John's talking about, raise the retail sales or the wholesaler's fee to $500. That was help discourage the pickup truck or car door, back door salesman type approach that would go across wherever and get supplies, come in and sell. We also wish to increase the public display fee, both to supplement the activity of local government in their issuing permit, monitoring, inspecting the area, and in many instances they stand by while those public displays are put on. That ran into some tough ground because of some of the civic organizations working on a very marginal basis. Yeah. That became some problem area, but it is an area that is a problem, a significant problem. The State Fire Marshal and the Fire Service of Oregon have opposed 2569, although it does include some things that could help us. It also introduces into what would be legal devices for the public to have in their possession for at least a limited period of time, new devices that we believe will increase injury and will increase increase fire causes, and we have a pretty good experience of that already.
What item is that?
All of the devices that they're proposing to be increased will, in fact, cause fire. They shoot off sparks, a cylindrical cone, fountain, floater, sparker, bomb, spinner, illuminated torch, all will and could cause fire. Grass lots, vacant lots, where they're played, fringes of schoolyards, a lot of areas. Not all fireworks, in fact, very few are shot off in an asphalt street. They do develop enough temperature to cause the same kind of injuries that we have pressing the sparkers, burns and punctures and things of that nature. We do recognize that, according to statistics, that...
That's one of the hazards of the road. It's kind of like stepping on a broken beer bottle.
Got injured in the bottom of my foot. I got that through the Red River a bunch of years ago, the same way, but that's part of life. The proponents of this bill have submitted some information, quite a bit of information, showing that in many areas some of the injuries and number of fires have decreased by increasing the amount of devices available to the public. I can't say for sure I support that or oppose that. It depends on the number of, you know, the numbers. Anybody can play games with statistics. They start looking at the highest number of injuries. In fact, I think this my friend to my left here introduced that falling downstairs is a heck of a lot more dangerous than fireworks. Falling downstairs happens 365 days a year. Fireworks only happen just for a few days. You start matching numbers about the injuries for, say, 10 days near 4th of July as compared to falling downstairs around that same 10-day period, there's a significant difference. So I can't really say I support the figures, although I'm not going to say their figures are in error. We do know we have a policing problem. We have a very hard enforcement problem. The thing he alluded to with the retail sales area just across the river has changed somewhat just recently, in that the State Fire Marshal of Washington did, through some means, either Attorney General's opinion up there or a modification of the legislation, stopped their ability to do what he is talking about of selling things in Oregon that were illegal to Russian. And as of last weekend, that's what that news blitz was about. They were doing a heck of a big sales push on that. There'll always be somebody figuring out a way to beat the system. The one that he was alluding to in Milwaukee was selling fireworks to Citizens Oregon under the auspices that they were wrapped, sealed, and a bill of lading was put on them to be shipped out of the state.
Yeah.
Or at least he advised his customer not to open them inside the state. That's not what the law intended, according to Attorney General, the District Attorney in Clackamas County. They felt that was against the law and chose to take action. The funding increases, which were our original intent, that and the possession, was to allow us to work within the intent of the legislature as it was, not open it up and not restrict it. I'm sure John can testify that a great many of the fire services of Oregon, in fact, there was a resolution from one of the Chiefs Association meeting to get legislation to prohibit fireworks because there is it's a big impact on the fire service as far as numbers of fires and injuries. We are not supporting the bill. You have us kind of in a bad position that we do need possession. The fee increases would help support the function of our staff time. Right now, it's subsidized by other activities to handle the permit issuing process, and this would make it at least self-supporting. But it would not, in this agency's position, improve. We do not know that it would improve fire safety or the citizen safety of Oregon.
Yeah. Require State Fire Marshal to establish rule for safe storage of these items. You're already doing that, aren't you?
We already are doing it. We have done that through a general administrative rule and working with the industry. They had some concern about not allowing us to limit those devices, and we reached the middle ground where we could utilize national standards. I don't recall 44 something a national standard dealing with retail or with fireworks, and there are suggested storages based on distance. How many devices or pounds of devices determine the distance from roadways, other buildings, schools, things of that nature.
What kind of a felony? What kind of penalty does that get?
Right now, the penalty sections is made up to provide up to $500 fines and or 6 months.
Now
that's what the law is right now. Without possession, with all the
what's
other.
What's this going to do? Just add the word possession. You're still going to have the same
penalties. That's one of the other fallacies in that a person can distribute devices not within the statutory identification of fireworks and pay the $500 fine and go right back to selling them. He makes more than that in the first few minutes than he does in a fine. This is the inconvenience of going to court.
And this possesses the way it's written is not really effective, is it? Or is it?
It's more effective than it is right now.
Well, they have before.
Yeah. That'll stop the opportunist. I think Representative Hooley indicated, you know, people, parents go to Mexico or cross the line and bring things back. They have to be caught in the act of selling, discharging fireworks. The law enforcement people got their hands full right now with much more serious criminal activities than to chase those things down. However, you do have somebody with...
this possesses and speaks to the private citizen, not any one of your license holders.
Could be, no, it's to the private citizen. It's that opportunity goes to Vancouver, buys $100, $50 of the stuff to come back and sell to his buddies or whatever. Now we can do something about that. Right now we can't. Senator Hurd was right. Several jurisdictions have enacted ordinances. Normally, a fire prevention code would deal with possession, but those are the only areas that could do it.
I think it's important to point out, Mr. Chair, that this bill does not have any negative impact on the ability of local jurisdictions to enact their more stringent laws. For example, the city of Portland can ban. I'd also like to clarify for the record, Mr. Franzen referred to my statistics or our statistics. I want to point out that those are statistics that come from the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and they are not statistics that we have gone out and developed ourselves, that they do come from the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Yeah, I know we lost all of our... You want to make a comment, Dan? I wish you would.
I just have a question. What a little ticky question. Section 5. You guys have a copy of the bill?
You have a copy of it?
Yeah. All right. Line 11. It says the state fire marshal may adopt reasonable rules, and then you've deleted and regulations for granting permits and so forth. Then down in the enforcement provision, line 23, is not in compliance with applicable statutes and regulations governing such sale or display. Why did we write that way?
Mr. Chair, I believe it is that's a legislative modification. Any new bill comes in, the whole place where regulations is taken out of law and have just rules. And I think that's an oversight there that regulation should be changed to rules and statutes or statutes and rules. In my mind, that would be it. But that's more legislative council takes care of that during that part. I don't think any of us introduced those things in our original bills.
Okay. Then another question. If the logic of this bill or the underlying premise is that you're going to take these safe family firecrackers and dissuade people from wanting firecrackers. You're going to take these safe family fireworks. Did I say firecrackers?
Yes.
I meant to say fireworks. You're going to let a kid hack a thing on a tree and watch it whirl around and blew one firecracker. That's the logic behind it, I think.
That is, one premise, yes.
Okay. Then, on the other hand, you're going to preclude or you're going to stiffen up the opportunity for people to sell these things by virtue of the fact that you want to increase the fee to $500 so that you don't have a guy operating out of the back of his pickup. I would think that if the premise is that you want to get these things in the hands of kids rather than fireworks, you want these guys dealing door-to-door. You want everybody. In order to make Oregon a safer firecracker place. Is there something wrong with that logic?
Well, it is, except that doesn't happen in real life. The person coming to get a retail sales permit, say you're going to sell legal fireworks, and then offer those other devices that are not permitted by